The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Zaxby's just out Philly the Philly again. The Zaxby's Chicken Philly is back with garlic aioli, sautéed peppers and onions, decadent melty cheese, and your choice of Zaxby's signature crispy chicken fingers or delicious grilled chicken. But it's only back for a limited time, so enjoy it while you can. No pressure. It's just the greatest sandwich of all time on a ticking clock. Order the Chicken Philly today. Who's got the sauce? Zaxby's.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our expectations series tonight. Got a very happy night in Baltimore. We are recording this on the night of June 20th, and the Baltimore Orioles just kicked the Yankees' ass 17-5 today. Their collective asses, I should say, in a very significant grudge match of a series. They win or tie their 22nd consecutive series. Very exciting. Joining me to talk about the players today is Jim Zipcoat.
That's
the
right.
Artist only known as Jim Zipcoat. doing well. Thanks for joining me, Jim. We're going to talk about Josh Ross and Jordan Stout today. Interesting pairing. And to let you look a little bit behind the curtain here, this probably would not have been Jim's first choice because he likes a lot of wide receiver talk and whatnot. But I know he did a lot of review of punting data specifically once he got this pairing, which was about the 27th of 29 assigned or something. You had about three to choose from. Is that right?
I think I didn't respond fast enough. I got a much bigger list at first, and then I took a couple of days, and then it was down to three, and then it was down to one. I guess I didn't respond fast enough that time either.
Well, I still have one that got re-unassigned, so I will make that available to someone I'm looking for to do. But anyway, let's start with Josh Ross, Jordan Stout, obviously a significant contributor and player on the Ravens. Josh Ross, like on the fringe of the roster.
Yeah.
Stout's spot is in, no doubt. Ross entering his third season as a backup inside linebacker. He'll be a year two player because of games played requirements. He actually did not meet the requirement to get a year of service this year with five games played, but he did last year when he was on IR the whole season. So
he was on IR the year before?
He's IR in 22, and he got,
credit for a season being on IR. Wow.
And then in 23, he played five games, including the both playoff games, and he did not get credit for a year of service. So interesting kind of a thing. He'll be 25 in October. We know the Michigan roots. Played in those two games in 22 on special teams, tackled in each game, which was nice. And in a lot of ways, obviously, special teams is where Ross needs to make his mark.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially with Trenton Simpson coming on, you know, it doesn't seem that there's going to be a lot of room for another inside linebacker to really make a mark on this team, barring the word that I do not like to use before training camp. It begins with an I. We don't need to say any more than that.
It's always a risk, of course, and it's always something you need to be prepared for at the inside linebacker position. The Ravens had Mosley missed some games over his time. They've been very fortunate so far with Roquan. I believe the only game that Roquan has missed is the one he sat out against Pittsburgh last year. And I might be wrong about that. There might've been one other, but he's been exceptionally ready to play, even though he's, you know, he's been a little dinged up as things have moved along.
That's been true on his career, isn't it? He was very much present and available in his Chicago years.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if he had any period of a brief injury or whatever, but I think you're correct. I think basically he's been available, which is, boy, that's a nice thing to have at your Mike linebacker spot. It's even more nice to have when you really don't have a backup. And that's the Ravens in 2024. Last year they had Delshon Phillips on the team. He was capable. They actually moved Malik Harrison there for a few mop-up snaps. Malik, I don't believe would be a long-term answer at inside linebacker. I think his body is built for outside linebacker at this point, but we'd see. It might be. You know, he weighs north of 255 pounds now. In terms of pass coverage for an entire game that you had to win, I don't know that they would put him in that Mike spot again.
I've always liked his field smarts and his aggressiveness. I feel like he's a good player who, you know, he was drafted. Was it the same draft as Patrick Queen?
Third round.
Yeah. I don't know. I always felt that he had the right instincts for inside linebacker and maybe more of a body for the outside. So there were certainly times early in his career where I trusted him more than I trusted Queen. But, you know, Queen obviously grew into a tremendous player.
I think it is possible that Harrison is going to have the Albert McClellan type career with the Ravens. I mean, they've already re-signed him essentially into that role. It's a nice potential recurring role leading eventually to the slope of the handshake crew that will inevitably come at some point. Right now, he's the leader of the special teams unit, but 4 years from now, that might not be true, but he'll be looking to squeeze out a ninth and 10th year, or maybe it's a seventh and eighth year of his career on the handshake crew, where he has a agreement to come back after the Ravens settle some injuries to IR DTR, to IR, which available for DTR. And the Ravens have a long history of doing that,
yeah.
But the league has now added two spots for teams to do that algorithmically, or whatever the correct word is, procedurally.
And haven't they also designated like a quarterback spot, like a third quarterback spot or whatever, who doesn't count against the roster? Or am I misunderstanding that rule?
The third quarterback is an active game day spot that if you're done with your first two quarterbacks, the third quarterback comes in, the first two can't return.
Right.
But if they're injured, you can bring on your third quarterback.
So he doesn't count against the 48, the game day. But he does count against the roster.
That's right. And okay. So you still have to carry a third quarterback on the roster in order to make use of that. And I expect the Ravens to do that again this year. But the what I'm talking about with the handshake crew is getting additional people onto IR to start the season, where it's not season ending IR.
Right.
And the NFL has come up with a new way that there are two special spots for that, for what the Ravens have always found a way to do it. Effectively, they've stolen from the Ravens, because the Ravens really had something they knew how to understood how to manipulate. They had players like Brent Urban, like Anthony Levine in previous years, and others who fit that, you know, they could easily have a handshake deal with, and now everybody's going to have that same advantage, which unfortunately makes it no advantage at all. So it'll be now, it won't be spots 56 and 57. It might be spots 58 and 59 that the Ravens are trying to get on that. And there is a limitation to the number of players you can have return from injury. It was 8 last year. I don't think it has changed, but if that actually turns out to be something of a limitation. And tying this back to Josh Ross, he actually was designated to return late in the year, and the Ravens effectively did it on a spec basis. So if they had lost somebody, they probably would have brought him back, but he didn't lose someone during the 3-week window. And so he reverted to IR at the end of that window. I'm sorry, that was in 22. In 22, okay. That happened with him. So let's go back to a little bit of Josh Ross' career to set this up a little bit. He's one of the best defenders in the 2022 preseason. Really jumped off in terms of some of his coverage ability, and specifically at the linebacker position. I think he makes more sense as a weak side linebacker. And I actually try to remember if he was playing Mike or Will at that point.
What's his size?
I do not have that right here. Let's go and bring that up.
I got it. 229, 6'0", 229.
A little bit small.
on the media guide. Yeah, that's definitely a Will size. That's not a Mike size.
Yeah. The Queen weighed about 227 pounds. Owosu weighed less than that, maybe 225 or even lower. But you know, there's guys that have the weight. The Ravens have a couple of UDFAs this year in camp who are Ross's main competition. It's Deion Jennings and Evandy Rigby. Evandy Rigby is the Temple guy. And I think he might be the front runner in this because he weighs about 239 pounds. So he's made to be a Mike and would give the Ravens a little more protection versus a loss of Roquan.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they might have to go to the street.
I mean, that would be an enormous hit, I think, because he is really, you know, his impact on the defense when he came over, it's really tied this team together, it seems to me, on that side of the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he does whatever's required, and the player next to him is better because of him and is more able to search, roam around looking for big plays. And that's certainly, you know, been something Roquan has really given the Ravens of tremendous value.
I hate to invoke the sainted Ray Lewis, but he has a little bit of that to him, right? The kind of broad impact, you know, when you plunk him down in the center, a little bit of leadership, a little bit of smart. I don't mean to undercut, a lot of leadership, a lot of smarts, but you know, a player who's a little bit greater impact than his actual play itself is.
Yeah, I would agree. He's certainly, we had a Roquan episode recently. It was with Devin Leary, as the other player, but the Roquan episode should be out there if you want to take a look at that. And basically, my feeling is that Roquan suffers in some of the stat categories, particularly in pass rush categories where they don't use him as much, because he's such a good coverage player that the defense derives more value from using him for that and using a player like Patrick Queen to rush in various ways, set picks, rush himself, cross blitz, whatever it might be, and take him out of some coverage responsibilities where Queen certainly was challenged during his Ravens career. Got better at the end, but was challenged over the course of his career.
When you say Roquan suffers in his pass rush numbers, I believe you're not talking about like pass rush win rate or any percentage numbers. You're just talking about like gross sacks as opportunities.
That's right. Gross pressures, gross sacks, whatever you want to go, the Ravens lived a lot off, getting first pressures and having the second pressure bring the quarterback down. A lot of times it was missed tackles on sacks, which is fine as long as you're going to get there with somebody else.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of odd shaped, narrow pyramid guys in terms of pressures at the base, quarterback hits in the middle, sacks at the top. They have a lot of narrow pyramid guys whose pressure rate by itself is not large enough to support the quarterback hits and sacks for most teams. But because Clowney and Owe were such outstanding pressure players like, in particular, Madubuike really benefited with a very high and narrow pyramid. They have a lot of sacks relative to their total number of pressures.
That's interesting. Have you discussed the pyramid more other times on your podcast?
Lots of times, actually. I don't want to go too deep into it.
Okay.
For the fifth time.
That's an interesting idea. And I didn't expect you to mention Madubuike. I assumed that you would be talking about like a slot corner blitzing or like a safety or something like that.
That's true, by the way, in general, and that's true of linebackers as well. So it's appropriate to this episode is those players do tend to have narrower pyramids because they're getting one-off opportunities, and it often comes to fruition as a sack or quarterback hit because they're really schemed up to get a free run more often.
Right.
Whereas guys who are making hay in the middle, they're the number of times they actually knock the quarterback down, those times are precious, and so they're.
Do you foresee, so something about what you said, you're talking about the narrowness of the pyramid, does that mean that you foresee, I know this episode is not about him, but maybe Justin Madubuike's sack numbers really coming back to the pack?
Yeah, it's not, his 13 sack number is not replicatable.
Of course.
It's not stable.
But seven or eight? That'd be huge number two for a DT.
Oh, sure. And I think that's possible. I think what I'm hoping for out of Madubuike and out of Owe, and we talked about this a lot on the Owe episode, was that the Ravens sack number drops off just a marginal amount. And when I say that, they were at 60, which is just an outlier number. If they dropped into the low 50s, that would be good. Mm-hmm. If they dropped into the high 40s, I'd be probably fine with that, depending on, you know, how it plays out. There's a lot to work through here, both in terms of getting as much pressure without Clowney. Maybe a big contribution from Adisa Isaac is on the table, but getting as much pressure without Clowney and then also without Mike McDonald. So it'll be an interesting year.
So I hesitate to keep us away from Josh Ross much longer, but I was wondering, first of all, Clowney was such a strange player. He generated so much pressure without actually finishing plays. And that's always been the knock on him over his career. But it was interesting to watch him game after game after game, right? So, you know, he's been in the league, 10 years or whatever, high draft pick, disappointment, labeled in some quarters. When you actually watched him play, he was kind of a remarkable specimen in that he really did get those pressures. He had unbelievable moves off the line. And then it was like he had no grip strength. Like he actually would arrive at the quarterback and knock him off the mark and then not be able to hold on to him. And I just wondered, does he have small hands? Like, just a really interesting player. Like, he would be the opposite of a narrow pyramid, it seems to me. He would be an extremely wide pyramid player.
Yeah, he had a good wide base. I mean, he did have 9 sacks, but he had plenty of pressures to support a number like that at outside linebacker. So certainly.
But on his career, he's been
very wide pyramid because he's had very few sacks. So, he's been much better pressure player than a finisher. So,
just interesting to watch him. And if you already know that he is deficient in actually finishing those plays, then you can really kind of appreciate the things that he does do. He's very disruptive for a guy who couldn't get sacks. It's really interesting. Well, he got 9. That's not nothing at all, but just a different player from other defenders, other great pass rushers that I've seen.
Very, very much so. It's pass rushers in a lot of way. They live off that single number. But the Ravens, fortunately, they believe in the pressure number, and it really paid off for them this last year in terms of making the secondary probably a little bit better than it was. Mm-hmm. The cover two looks helped. The giving up something of run defense would help.
Right.
But I do think, getting back to that and then tying this back into Josh Ross, because we've got to kind of move on here.
Yeah.
The Ravens I really need to have a good run-stopping Mike linebacker, because they're already giving things up at the line of scrimmage by what they want to do in coverage. So if they're going to have Arthur Mollett on the field, if you're going to have Ardarius Washington on the field at slot corner, and you're going to do it on a early down where the other team might run, you better have two inside linebackers who know how to run fit very well.
Right.
When they play the Steelers, they have other things they can do. The Browns, maybe with Nick Chubb back, but the Steelers in particular, because they have good tackle breakers. Both their top backs are good tackle breaking backs, Harris and Warren. They were bringing up Hamilton to essentially play like a linebacker, not to play slot corner. I want to be specific about that. Right. But to really play as a third inside linebacker, which is different. I thought they did pretty well with that. Of course, they lost both the games to the Steelers, and one of them they didn't play anybody, but the first game they lost to the Steelers in kind of a miserable offensive game with a lot of drops in Pittsburgh. If I know folks really want to remember this one, but if we're going to ever, face our own problems, it's on the day they beat the Yankees. The Orioles beat the Yankees 17-5. Seems like a good time. All right.
Do I want to jump on that, or do I want to leave that alone? Well, so you mentioned the Steelers and potential opponents who might be opponents who can create problems with the run game. We've got Greg Roman on the schedule this year, so that's certainly going to be a matchup that is going to test their run defense, I would imagine.
Yeah, and they'll have Gus Edwards, and we'll see what kind of back Gus Edwards is with a pocket passer, because Herbert is not going to be running a mesh offense. At least I don't believe so, with Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins. We'll see how good those guys are. It's San Diego. Sorry, I want to call them that always.
Me too.
The Chargers offensive line was pretty good last year playing with some secondary kind of talent, and they got better this year, particularly with the drafting of Joe Alt. And I think they could be one of the best lines in the entire league.
I think J.K. Dobbins is if he's healthy, which God knows, you know, is a huge question mark, but I think he's an incredibly talented running back.
You know, I don't even know who he is anymore. That's the best I can say about it is that you know, he looked like he was almost, well, okay. He looked like he was carrying a piano in 2022 for the whole time he was on the field. Although he had some good
before the return from injury, right?
And after, but after he left a lot of yards on the field on long plays because he would be very good for the first 10 yards. And then all of a sudden he couldn't outrun anybody. So it was, you know, he had a fine year. Okay. The Ravens scheme worked very well for him. If you look at his yards per carry, there's no problem with it really in that 22 season. Then he came into 23. Of course, he got hurt right away. I think it's fair to say.
I think that you're off a year because 2023 just, oh yeah. And he left. Yeah. Right. He was hurt right away and we never saw him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we was hurt in the first game. And we barely, you know, barely saw him play at all for the entire season. So he missed a year. He played, you know, well, but obviously had issues returning from injury. And then he had another injury. I have no idea what back he is right now.
So I mostly am going off of the last five games of 2022 where he came back prior to the playoffs. And he was tremendous those five games. But he was not good, you know, the first part of that season. And I agree with you. I don't know what he has left, but if he has something, a significant percentage of himself left, then I think he's very, I guess I want to say at his peak, I think he's a very talented back. I don't know if his peak is anywhere, you know, recoverable at this point.
We'll get to see. And I if this were a Ravens discussion, I'd go further down this rabbit hole, but I'm going to cut it off right there because J.K. Dobbins is not our problem. Whatever happens to J.K. Dobbins, he's not our problem, right?
Right. So I just bring the Chargers up in the listing of, you know, with Nick Chubb and the Browns and Najee Harris and the Steelers and Greg Roman and the Chargers, like they're going to be able to run the ball however they manage it, you know. And so that would be a game where we would also need, like, you know, run fitting linebackers and, you know, maybe Kyle Hamilton dropping down to a third ILB sort of role, I would imagine.
I would agree. And that I think, you know, as far as it goes with him playing the weak side linebacker spot, Board has been brought back, I believe, as a special teams ace. He only played two snaps on defense for Detroit last year. So I don't really anticipate that he's the first up at inside linebacker, but I could be wrong. Even on the weak side, if something happened to Simpson, you could see it. The Ravens have other options. If they lose Simpson at weak side linebacker, in particular in terms of splitting that role. And I don't know that Board is really the guy you want on first and second down when there's a higher chance for a run. And I know he's not the guy I want rather than a dime back on third down. I know he's not that guy. So we've seen him actually in that role and not really do very well. So I'd rather have
Chris Board now, right?
Chris Board, yes, yeah, right. I am. So Ross, because of what we know about him, he could be part of a split arrangement. But in his case, the other guy you need is a two down thumper to go with him. Or maybe Ross is a little bigger, a little stronger as a third year player, and he's able to play the weak side effectively in a full time role. Not a 0% chance, but also not, I think, what the team expects out of Ross this year. He's certainly a guy who's on the fringe of the roster. They have these other guys they're considering. And Ross's big value, this club is on special teams, much like Board, that he's a guy who he could probably be on the practice squad probably to start the season. If I had to guess, probably does not make the roster.
Right.
And then he's a three elevation guy. Fair enough.
I'm sorry, what is a three elevation?
Meaning he gets three practice squad elevations during the year. And you do that, and then eventually you bring him up to the 53 after you're out of those elevations. So essentially, it gives you time for the roster to attrit with a player who is not particularly likely to be stolen away from you.
No.
And if another team comes sniffing around, by the way, one of your practice squad players, you don't have to, typically that player who has an apartment in town, has friends on the team, is comfortable in the system, usually comes to the team and says, hey, you know, the Seahawks want to sign me. Are you guys ready to elevate me to the 53? And if the Ravens feel it's worthwhile, they'll make that move.
I just can't see him. Josh Rosh does not seem like a spend a lot of resources on him kind of player. You know, I don't see other teams clamoring for his services off the practice squad. I don't see the Ravens super eager to elevate him to the 53 should some team come clamoring for him off the practice squad. And if I had to guess, I would say, you know, if I had to handicap it, I would say 55% he's not on the roster at all this year.
Okay. I mean, it might get elevations, but is not never is on the 53. Is 55%.
I would say I would have said 55% doesn't even appear for the Ravens at any point.
Oh, okay. I think I'd bet a higher chance to play in games for the Ravens than 45.
Okay.
And I think I've
because
got that
of the special teams value.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think you end up with some of those guys. They are really on the fringe of the roster, but they're valuable to have on game day. So they sit other players on game day to use elevated special teams specialists.
Yeah.
And the Ravens have a long history of this. So it's not like we have to go player by player through that, but they certainly have done it in the past. And, you know, regarding your other comment, though, let me just get down this. We're already going to set a record for time on this episode. It sounds like because we want to talk about Jordan Stout. I know you have a lot of data.
But we're Josh certainly Ross, setting a record for time spent talking about Josh Ross.
Yeah, there you go. Let me make sure I have this right. Yes, with Josh Ross, you're saying he's not the kind of player that anybody would be clamoring to get on the roster. And it may be true that there's not enough of a difference between him and Jennings and Rigby in terms of who is the valuable player that they might want to elevate or that they'd even keep at the end of camp on cutdown day or however they might manipulate the roster to deal with him. But it is injury dependent, I would contend. And so, as you know, the replacement level decreases at every position across the entire NFL with attrition and injuries, and you know, some team is going to find themselves in a nuclear scenario at inside linebacker. It happens every year, and that's when a player like Josh Ross suddenly looks like one of the best available inside linebackers in the whole NFL.
I love the way you phrased that because I've never thought of it that way, but it's absolutely true. We think of replacement level, you know, those of us stat nerds who talk about things like replacement level, we think of it as being, you know, like a line, but replacement level on draft day, replacement level on roster cutdown day is one thing. Replacement level on November 1, you know, after players have been dropping from a rough season, that's a different animal. And you're right. That would be a lower threshold to clear.
It's, you know, it's interesting because I could make the argument for football. I think just personal experience and without having good data to back it up, I'd say replacement level certainly goes down. The corners that you end up being able to sign off the street, particularly in December versus September, totally different animals.
Yeah.
But in baseball, I would contend the replacement level that is meaningful actually increases as the season goes along. And the reason being, teams are out of contention. Bad teams trade their decent players. They get added to the pool. Not always true in pitching as much, but definitely in terms of position players, there are more available talent that's available at some cost in terms of prospects, but that good teams like the 2024 Orioles can't afford to pass up on when a average or slightly above average player is exactly what the team needs to get past. Not a superstar usually, but you know, 1983 Orioles, their famous pickup at midseason. Do you remember?
No.
Todd Cruz. He was the guy who got them by at third base for the season, a terrible player. And, you know, but gave him a little bit of defense you know, I think his first game, he had two three-run homers against the Tigers. So that was
that'll make friends in the audience.
Yeah. Let's say one other thing for Todd Cruz. So is it I just Channel 2 interning in 1985. And Todd Cruz had dropped a long way since the 83 pennant run, and he was playing on the Channel 2 softball team for some reason as a ringer. It was absolutely a hilarious situation. I don't think he was doing anything technically for Channel 2. I don't know how they did it, but they got him on their softball team. So
we wonder why we spend 30 minutes talking about Josh Ross. I don't know how that happens.
Yes. All right. So anyway, he's a very clear 4-unit special teams player, core guy. I think he's clearly somebody the Ravens want in the kickoff coverage department. probably on kickoff returns as well, since a lot of those players, there's overlap, and you can't get up to 11 players very easily without playing some of your starters on those units. So you really want linebackers in particular who can play all four of those units. I think he had actually done some work. That's Board I'm thinking of, so I'll take that back, on kick block units as well, which is another big one to do. But that's not Ross. But, you know, what the overriding thing about Josh Ross is, I don't really feel like we know who he is. We don't know who J.K. Dobbins is, I'll say right now, in terms of
Who Jordan Stout is.
And we probably know who Jordan Stout is, but we really don't know who Josh Ross is going into this season. We had a great preseason to work with.
Oh, so you mean in terms of ceiling, like he might have much more ceiling maybe than we're thinking. Is that right?
I wouldn't bet on it, but okay. I'll just say we don't know if he'll be a bad special teams and a bad linebacker who doesn't make it, or we don't know if he could be a Malik Harrison style survivor who could hang around, play some defense at a minimally an adequate level, because that's really what the Ravens demand out of their special teams linebackers, and be a guy who would be around for 6 or 7 years with the Ravens. I think either is possible, and I don't think we know exactly where he fits in on that spectrum. Do I think he's likely to jump in and be Simpson or Queen should Simpson go down this year? I think that's less likely.
Yeah,
I don't think that's really where he's headed. But you know, I can't absolutely rule it out. I just think it's less likely.
I think the John Harbaugh Ravens do have a tendency to kind of redshirt guys and grow them, UDFAs who don't make the team in year one, but they are actually kind of still on the fringe of the league. You know, those guys do show some value in years two, years three, year four. So I guess you're right. We don't know that he's gone. It's tough for me to talk about a player that we don't know anything about, that we don't know who he is.
Well, that's fair enough. Let's move on here. What's a good season for Josh Ross from your perspective?
Staying on the roster, three call-ups and then elevated to the 53 after he runs out of call-ups. So let's say, November or something like that. That would be a good season for Josh Ross, in my opinion.
I think that's very fair, and I think you're being well minimalist about that. I think it's very similar. I would just read mine. Is the Ravens' clear choice as at least the fifth inside linebacker, which means it's earns him a spot on the practice squad and perhaps some early activations like we talked about, is elevated three times or activated prior as the fourth inside linebacker.
Yeah.
Shows enough in practice and special teams to stay in the seams. 2024 plans may not be activated every week. So obviously he's a guy – he's truly on the fringe when you have a good special teams player and you're deciding sometimes to sit him. It's often easier to have an outside linebacker that you can't figure out how to use him on special teams and sit him occasionally, like a Tavius Robinson, say, or a player of that ilk, or David Ajabo, maybe. What does a great season look like?
A great season would involve an injury to a starter and he steps in and shows that he actually belongs in the league, on a roster on a full-time basis.
Okay. All right. I went a little lower than that. I think even at the 80th percentile, I just wasn't comfortable going with that. And I hate the ones that force somebody else to get hurt for this guy to have a great season. My great season for him is a camp and preseason forced the Ravens to cut both of their UDFAs. I think that is good for Josh Ross. If Rigby and Jennings are, he beats out both of them. He's activated regularly. He plays well on special teams and shows some limited flash in mop-up duty. Doesn't have to be much. 50 snaps is the level I said for Smith and Simpson. So that's I don't know. I don't have the exact number of snaps right in front of me that Delshawn Phillips and Simpson got this last year, but Simpson didn't play, I don't think, as many as 50 snaps. Might have been about 40 if I were to guess about it correctly. But anyway, it's certainly under 100. And if it was a similar season from Josh Ross, I think that'd be pretty good. In fact, maybe he gets to play week 18 against the Browns when the Ravens have their spot wrapped up, if we're thinking positively here.
Yeah. I'm trying to look up game logs for Delshawn Phillips.
I'll pick it up while we're doing the next one. But Jordan Stout is one we really need you focused on, because I know you've done a lot of research here. Third-year punter, largely delivered on expectations as being one of the best punters in the draft in 22. meaning I could see him on the trajectory to being a good punter in the league. Yeah, not that he was right away. Did not have a great special teams year in 2023. So let's talk about a little bit of that. And I know you did a lot of research, so I want to let you lead this discussion. And I have some numbers too that are the secondary kind of stats on punting.
Yeah. So I think so one of the things that I did not do was I did not go to the DVOA page, you know, and pull up you know, the Ravens punting unit and hidden yardage on special teams. One thing that I did do was return to kind of an area of study that I had looked at like 10 or 15 years ago, which is that when we think of what punters do, punters get on the field. I'm not talking about their work as holders, but when they actually punt, there are two very different situations where they punt. And the one is, you know, you're backed up in your own end zone and you want them to boom that sucker out, you know, and get a big kick and flip field position. And the second situation is when you are maybe near midfield and you want them to control their punt and really position it someplace where you can minimize a return, pin the other team inside the 20. And so I'm calling those booms for situations where you want to really kick away, and pins, situations where you're trying to pin, or pin attempts, I should say.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us, for open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
But I keep shortening it, where you're trying to pin the opponent near, you know, to avoid a touchback. And so he's not kicking as hard as he could. So if there are situations where your punter, where you know your punter is not kicking as hard as he could potentially be, then it seems to me that gross average over all of his punts is an inappropriate metric to look at, right? Because you don't know what the breakdown is of situations. You know, when is he kicking away? When is he, you know, kicking short?
Okay, I'm with you on the theory here. Where did you have the cutoff point be? The 50-yard line, the 40-yard line? Where was it?
The 40, our own 40, the team's 40-yard line. So the idea there, if a gross punt is around 45 yards, that's actually a little small for a gross punt. You know, then from the 40, you're getting down to about the 15, five-yard return or so. You know, so I would say, and really you could be more aggressive and save like from your own 35. Could be a pin attempt, especially there are some very strong legged kickers out there. I thought 40 was a nice round number and easier to sell. So I used my cutoff as, you know, behind the 40 yard line, those are booms. And from the 40 and in, those are pin attempts.
How did the NFL's total data that you've looked at bifurcated between booms and pins?
So if we look at, give me a second here because I didn't divide it that way. I actually divided it by kickers. Do you mind actually if I just go by the way I have it divided out?
Sure, absolutely.
So I have all the data for 2022 and I only have Jordan Stout's data for 23. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to talk about 22's data if you don't mind. So your league leader in gross punts on booms was Ryan Stonehouse of the Titans with 56 yards per punt on booms. Mm-hmm. Jordan Stout, so the last place guy, well, so I'm sorry. Let me sort this table here. So Jordan Stout on booms averaged 51, almost 52 yards on booms, which was on the higher end, but not near the top of the league. The
60th percentile, 65th percentile.
Give me a second. I'll sort the table for you and I will let you know.
Okay. I'll just say in terms of his 22 data, he was in the top half in most categories. It's 6.6 yards per return was really important. So the Ravens had a really low yards per return number. And a lot of that is him. You know, you talk about out kicking your coverage. So you have that. And the Ravens had were still fairly high in terms of their ranking by DeVoa. So if you look at FTN for DeVoa, the old Football Outsiders number, they still rank pretty well on that.
Right.
But I'm interested to hear how in boom and pin terminology he worked out.
Yeah. Okay. So in 22, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, he was eighth in gross average on booms with 51.77. So that's pretty good. Yep. The guys near him were Brian Anger of Dallas and Jack Fox of the Lions.
So 75th percentile of 32 teams.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And then give me a second and I will sort it for pin attempts. Sort. Pins average. All right. So in pin attempts, he was much lower. He was 31st in average on pin attempts. But for pin attempts, I wouldn't look for gross yardage because by their nature, you know, the thing that you want for pin attempts is the opponent's starting yard line. That's really the only viable metric. You know, that kind of factors in.
Yep.
Touchbacks and everything. So for those, for the opponent's starting yard line, Jordan Stout was 22nd in the league.
Ooh.
With an average opponent's start of 15.8 yard line.
Okay. I will say some of it is Stout, but there was also probably some things that were happening that were not good in terms of the return group, which allowed 14.8 yards per return. It was fourth highest in the entire National Football League in 23. Probably some of that is Stout. It's split, no doubt, between booms and pins with a higher percentage of that YPR coming on booms.
Whoa. Excuse me. I appreciate your explaining it, but I actually screwed up very badly and what I told you is dead wrong.
Okay.
On 2022 in pins, Jordan Stout had the He had the third worst opponent start. I had this sorted correct. Yeah. So
in 23 that was right. So or 22.
22.
Okay.
So the league best starting field position, opponent starting field position for an opponent for a punter on pin attempts, with 25 pin attempts was Cameron Johnston on the Texans, who pinned people down on the 9 yard line on average on pin attempts.
Well, that was Stout's thing coming out of college was he had had an incredible record of in 10 punts being 53% of his total, I believe. So it's, you know, it's unfortunate that he really hasn't been as successful at the pro level. And the Ravens certainly a very special teams focused team. So hopefully he'll bring some more of that. You know, there is a risk here right now, and I'm going to give you some other stats from 23, and they're definitely mixed. But he could end up being a one contract player because the Ravens generally have had one contract punters, Montgomery, Richardson, Kyle Richardson, when he was here, Zastadil was here for, I forget if Zastadil punted somewhere else before Baltimore, but he was only here for a short period of time. And then, you know, Sam Cook was the exception, was they had for a very long time, and then they've got Stout, and it could well be that you save money at punter, and if you don't have a really exceptional player like Cook, I won't call him a generational punter, but a very successful directional punter who continually is keeping up with the league,
then yeah, I think
you probably get rid of the guy. After one
a highly skilled specialist, I would call him. He was not like a generational leg or anything like that, but the thing that he could do well, he did extremely well.
Yeah, and you could argue that he's a Hall of Fame holder. So that was the other thing they were getting out of him at the same time. But let me talk about what he did in 23 here, because I did.
Actually, can I add one thing for 2023?
Sure.
So for 2022, we said that he was a disappointing 59% inside the 20 on pin attempts. He improved dramatically in 23 on that category. He's up to 73%. Mm-hmm. Inside the 20 on pin attempt. So that's actually a very nice jump. And if that's his trajectory, then
where did it rank in the league?
Well, I only did his. I didn't get the whole.
Would it have ranked in 22?
Give me a second. It would have ranked. I should have sorted this data and printed it out, you know, ahead of time.
Or send me a copy.
What's that?
Or send me a copy so I could play with it at the same time and not have to ask you questions on the fly.
In 22, that would have ranked kind of middle of the league, honestly. Okay. 18th.
So improvement, but still not at the top of his class.
Well, yeah, improvement up to the middle.
I've got a lot of data here. I'm just going to go through real quickly. 34 of 75 punts in total were in 20, 45.3% in 23. It was in the top half of the league. As I've got it here, 5 touchbacks tied for the league median. So he's right in the middle of the pack there. He was tied for the 7th most out of bound punts. I think that is not a good thing today. I think the coffin corner used to be the terminology when we grew up, Jim, but that's long since left the game, and directional punters want to leave the ball in the field of play and not let it go out of bounds. You're often shanking a punt when it does and losing yardage on the kick. So it was the 7th most out of bound punts. Hang time averaged 4.25 seconds. That was tied for 22nd among 30 punters with 50% of the most punts. So there were 30 total punters who met this minimum standard for punts, and his 4.25 hang time was 22nd of those. They did have weather play a very significant role in kicking and punting, and that's something Football Outsiders tries to track, but the Ravens played in the 7th worst weather of any NFL team in terms
that's
of
interesting.
Yeah, altering punts and kicks. So a lot of the teams that play in a dome, they tend to also be your best punting teams, or a lot of the ones who play in consistently warm weather. Like if you play in
San Diego,
that's SoFi is both a dome stadium and a warm stadium. Okay. In the case of San Francisco, is not a cold environment really ever. It's it never gets down into the 20s to play a football game. 50 is not cold for a football game. And so they're that's really pretty good. But anyway, Stout's 23, we would agree, was certainly nothing truly special, but the Ravens still ranked as the 11th best team in DVOA. And a lot of that was due to their 6.6 yards per return number. Now, Stout has to share some of the value of that with the coverage team, but it is in part Stout.
Josh Ross, for example, he's making this.
but anyway, it's certainly something he needs to share, but it is still good if you're in the top third of the league, which he basically was. As a punter, if he's maintaining his other very significant responsibility, which is the holding responsibility, which I want to talk about.
So we hear on TV week after week that the job of the holder is critical, and I'm sure that that is true. However, I would also think that a holder is a fairly replaceable. Certainly easier to find a holder than a quarterback. You know, like if we're going through the spectrum of positions, like I will grant you that a holder is important, but I would also assume that a good coaching staff can find a holder kind of anywhere. Am I being dumb about that?
I think that's a cavalier attitude. Obviously, it would make like Randy Brown's job a lot less important. I mean, the things they did to try and replicate what Cook could do for Tucker were incredible. I mean, they went out and they paid for a long snapper. They paid for Tyler Ott they paid for Tyler Ott in 22. Right? It was Nick Moore in 23 and Nick Moore in 22.
Moore's back this year, right?
Moore's back. And so anyway, either way, they brought in Sam Cook as a specialist, and they did all that high tech stuff, which I think high tech may be slightly overstating it. You know, I used a GoPro camera on vacation this last time, and that's what they were doing with Stout, was having him wear a GoPro camera and try and understand how he was holding the football and how it related to individual kicks for Tucker. But the problem that I have with Stout is that 2 years in a row, Tucker has declined. Now, Tucker being the age he is, we should probably come to expect that. And one of the things that Aaron Schatz pointed out when he was on the show talking about Aaron, you know, basically about Tucker being the greatest kicker of all time, was that all of the kickers basically in the group had had some decline phase where they probably had a zero or even a small net negative in terms of their field goal and extra points relative to expectation, which is the key number I'm going to talk about. So in 2021, I believe Tucker was something like 20 points over expectation in that category. It might have been his best year in the category, though he's had a bunch of great years. So what I just tell you is look at the Football Outsiders number. Tucker has had some outstanding numbers between 10 and in the low 20s in terms of points above expectation. So anyway, he was at 8.8 field goal and extra points above expectation in 2022, which was still second best in the entire NFL, but a big step down. Yeah. And then he dropped to plus 3.1 in 2023, which was 13th in the NFL. That is not supposed to happen to the Ravens. And we certainly hope it's not the end of Tucker's reign of greatness.
So Tucker turns 35 in November, just before Thanksgiving. Yep. And it was never going to last forever, him always being the greatest kicker in the league. I think that, players who use explosion, like quarterbacks who throw, defensive ends who, rush off the line of scrimmage, kickers who are kicking 50-yard field goals, they have to generate a high amount of force per unit, per second. They have to generate a lot of power, and power athletes decline with age. I think that it would be – so I'm not talking about whether Jordan Stout is impacting Justin Tucker's numbers or not. It would be reasonable if Tucker were going to kick until he was, let's say, 42, to pick a number out of the air. It would be reasonable to expect that his leg strength would decline to league average. And he would still have value for, his – judgment, his reliability, his calmness under pressure, his consistency of technique, like he could decline to, something near league median or lower and still have a lot of value for his reliability on, 35-yard kicks or whatever.
All right. I'll say I don't think that Tucker can go below the zero mark on field goal and extra points thing. He's paid a lot of money.
That's true.
The Ravens have always shown a willingness to, get 20% of the player at 80% of the player, 20% of the cost.
Right.
And I think at kicker, you can do that. And that's, I think, true. That, they will replace him if he has three straight years, probably like he just had, meaning two more.
Do you think that he is such a perfectionist that he would retire rather than make them cut him?
My guess is no. I mean, he's a very marketable commodity. I think that some other team is going to want Tucker to try and make a comeback with them, and they'll, he'll probably will make a very good business decision, move to another city, finish his career with another team. And if it was New York or something, he'd really be thinking about how can I get myself a better sponsor than Royal Farms, who will make me a ton of money. I'm seriously. I mean, he'd be representing some gas chain or in addition to Royal Farms,
Swiss Bank or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, he'd have a huge deal in terms of that, and he'll kick for as long as he can make that work. In terms of let's get back to Stout for a second.
Before we move off of Tucker, did Aaron Schatz give you any indication about some very long career kickers? Like I'm thinking Morton Anderson, Adam Vinatieri had a very long career.
None of them are in his category.
Say again?
Yeah. None of them are in his category. The one guy was the Chiefs guy from the 80s, whose name is escaping me right now, but it's not Jan Stenerud. It was after him. And it's before Butker. And he actually kicked in the 80s and 90s, who is the other guy up there with Tucker in terms of field goals and extra points above expectation career. And those two are so far above everybody else, it's not even funny.
But what I want to know is, did those guys maintain a positive number late in their career?
No, they had a decline phase as well. It's the other guy, but he was, when he made a list of the top 10, was on the show, and it's Aaron Schatz, by the way. A lot of people pronounce his name Schatz, but he really corrected me. And so I want to let other people know. Yeah. But
anyway, like shots fired.
Yeah, shots fired, officer down. There you go. Yeah. The point he made was applicable to all of the retired kickers that were on the list. Okay. They all had a decline phase. And he said, you know, he thought it was probably coming for Tucker as well. And I'm paraphrasing here. Show's out there, by the way. It's a really good show that Aaron did that goes through.
He's a
this.
Great get as a guest, by the way. I mean, that's fabulous.
Oh, he's very willing and available. A great guy. But he was a great get. I really appreciated having him on. But anyway, he made that point about the kickers that were on the list. And I said, well, is there any danger that Tucker, who I think was a few points behind or a few points ahead, but it's very close to this Chiefs kicker, is there a chance that Tucker's decline phase is going to come so soon that he will drop behind? You know, he's like, no way. It's, you know, Tucker's
headed
for the Hall of Fame. I think that's the one. Nick Lowry, I believe, is the one.
So, I'm sorry, I stepped on right as you were coming to the climax of what Aaron Schatz said.
It was basically the entire story was that he thought that Tucker was a sure thing to finish with a higher career FG and extra plus extra point expectation number than Lowry. I asked the question also because field goal percentages have gone way up.
Right.
Extra point percentages have come down a little bit with new rules, but the field goal percentage in particular has gone up. So it seems like it should be harder to have a big number relative to league average. And so Tucker has been at some points the beneficiary of that by leading the way all the way. Of course, that right there tells you he's better than the league average the entire time he's been playing. Right. That's really what you want to do. But I would think as if you get to a 90% field goal rate across the league, which we're nowhere near at this point. But if you get to 90% at some point in the future, there'd be chances of them changing the rules, but there'd also be very little differentiation among kickers, period. That, you know, you'd be playing for who are the guys who can give you 6 extra yards of maximum distance, and you're playing for, you know, who it becomes a narrower niche value space. Where I think Tucker could have additional value, and I really want to get on to Stout here, is in with the new kickoff rules and being a great placement kicker on that. And so I don't know how long these rules are lasting, but I do know the Ravens, when they get a new rule set, it's like getting a big Christmas present because they will figure out how to manipulate this.
So I think one of the reasons I wanted to dwell so much on Tucker and potential age-related decline and, you know, how late did Adam Vinatieri stay positive and all that kind of thing is because I just cannot imagine holding is such a refined skill. Like, I wouldn't keep a mediocre punter because he was a great holder. I would try to find a good punter who was a good holder and not a great holder. Am I thinking about this backwards or – like, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't think the context of Jordan Stout's play is nearly as large as Tucker's. So I think if you look at how many points plus or minus does Jordan Stout cost you in a season, I think it's a lot less.
In terms
less,
of just his punting, not his holding.
In terms of his punting, yes. Because I think that the context, what there is, for the results of punting, and we've seen that in some of the Ravens stats, is very much split between the punter and the coverage unit, which also gets some of the credit. In the case of a kicker, the kicker has to share a little bit of credit with the holder, a little bit of credit with the long snapper, and maybe a little bit, tiny amount of credit with the people who design the blocking schemes and whatnot on the inside.
Sure.
Most of it is the kicker. Most of it is the kicker. Yep. And so it's really having to figure out how much is really the holder. But even if you said that only, let's say you said 70% was Tucker and you gave 20% to Stout and 10% to all other factors, I think you'd still see that the Tucker context is larger than the Stout context, even with Stout getting a juicy 20% of the Tucker kicking benefit.
So you're saying the Wolfpack is has so much greater value than the punter does, so much delta, you know, greater delta value or whatever compared to what else, that it's worth keeping the Wolfpack together and keeping a mediocre punter if it keeps that other unit fully functioning.
Yeah, if you don't think you can replace the punter and keep a holder at the same level. I mean, Stout, in some way, I mean, this may be part of the problem. We haven't identified it yet, but Tucker's dropped off two straight years. Mm-hmm. Is some of that due to Stout not being a great holder? Mm-hmm. I don't know that we know the answer to that question yet. So I think the Ravens, it's an internal diagnosis they really need to make. And I honestly trust them to make the right call.
Yeah,
that means, you know, switching again, then we do. But I had four things I want to see in terms of improvements from Stout this year. I want to jump to that, and then good and great, because we're way up against it in terms of time.
I'm here. So sorry. Yeah.
Tell me anything you'd like to see from Stout as well. But the four things: rekindle the synergy with Tucker. So get to a better field goal extra point place. I don't care whose fault it was. I want the holding, and I want the overall number to improve such that we're not concerned about the holding. That's basically it. In terms of punting, I want to see him improve his ability to deliver unreturned punts. Mm-hmm. Okay, so specifically, in-20s are a big portion of that. You don't want touchbacks among those non-returned punts, so I'm not talking about those.
Right.
But I'm talking about the other unreturned in-play punts. I want him to improve hang time, because he's just in the middle of the league. And this is one of the things he came into the league with, is the boomingest leg in college football other than Matt Araiza. And he's gone for good reason. But
very good reason, yes.
But yeah, we want to see a return to some better hang time there. I think it's probably due. And then the other thing is, I want him to be coverage friendly in terms of not out-kicking the coverage team's ability. That does overlap a little bit with delivering unreturned punts. But the Ravens did not have a good year in terms of defending punt returns this last year. And I think part of it's on Stout, is that he probably outkicked the coverage a few times. And that led to some big plays. And the Ravens also probably are not particularly happy with the way their special teams punt coverage league, you know, worked out last year to be fourth in the NFL in punt return yardage allowed.
Right. So I think that, as Ravens fans, not this most recent draft, but when they drafted Jordan Stout, I think all of us thought, you know, it's a fourth round pick, which is a high pick to spend on a punter. Mm-hmm. And we heard after the draft that there were a couple other teams who were sniffing around Stout in that same round. So if the Ravens were going to get him, they really did have to spend that high a pick. But I think we as Ravens fans thought to ourselves, well, the Ravens spent a fourth round pick on a punter. They obviously know what they're doing with punting. This guy's going to be great. And I think we around the country, most analysts, I know Mike Tannier was in this boat, thought, you know, well, even good organizations occasionally screw up with a draft pick. It's stupid to draft a punter with a fourth round pick. And I held that thought in abeyance, you know, believing in the Ravens. But now we've seen two seasons of Stout be extremely mediocre as a punter. And I think at some point it's fair to say, you know, maybe that was not a good spend of a draft pick. You know, there was, you know, Calvin Austin was on the board. There were other players. You know, we limped through the end of the 2022 season without a wide receiver core. You know, there I think there was a player who went, Romeo Dubs, I think, went to the Packers maybe after the Jordan Stout pick. You know, I am to the point with Stout where I think that maybe it was a poor allocation of resources and may have cost the Ravens dearly in 2022.
Okay, so you did two things. One of them is very fair to say it might have been a poor allocation of resources to use a fourth round draft pick on him. I don't think it's ever fair to compare one draft pick at one point to every player drafted after him with the 2020 hindsight of 2 years.
Well, so I agree with you, except in the 2022 draft, we're all clamoring for a warm body at the wide receiver position. So I'm only comparing him to the wide receivers who could have been drafted then.
All right. Well, fair enough. And you're right that Austin was a name that was on the table for the Ravens during that draft. So not unreasonable. Let's go on. What's a good season for Jordan Stout from your perspective?
I want to see him improve that opponent starting field position on pin attempts to something, you know, closer to the top 10, your best 10 in the league. I'd like to see his boom gross punts get up to the top. I want to see him be a top 10, you know, punter. And I agree with everything you're saying about directional punts and, you know, outkicking, not outkicking his coverage, that kind of thing. But, I mean, he's just a punter and he does not seem to have a special leg like some of the guys who uncork 75 yard punts and stuff like that. So he needs to get his skill-based punting, you know, into the top 10 and it isn't there.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. I have a couple of things. First is a rebound in Tucker's performance in terms of points relative to expectation to at least the 2022 level, which would be about 8.8 field goal plus extra points.
And you're putting that in Stout's.
I'm putting that in Stout's good season. I think it's achievable, by the way. I think it's very achievable.
Yeah.
And that's why I have it at the 60th percentile performance would do it. If Tucker comes in at 5 points or at 3 points, I think this portion of a good season, he will not have achieved.
Okay.
But anyway, there is more. And I want him to develop some directional trickery as a punter in the way we saw with Cook over the years that developed. So he's probably at the heart of it more of a boomer than a directional punter of the type
technician.
Able to, you know, manipulate the football in a way that sometimes made it difficult to catch.
Right.
You know, took a vector that was directly away from the return man. They could actually directionally punt effectively. I don't feel like they're able to do that same thing. They probably can do it in a half field way, but not in a fifth of a field way that you might have been able to get with a Cook. So I'd like to see some better directional punting from that. And I'd like to see his net punting average improve at least slightly. I would put that at opponent starting field position relative to expected starting field position as the key metric there. So, you've got expected field position is well known or it's out there. It's publicly available for various yard lines. So we want to see that he improves on that in the same way that the extra point and field goal number improves. But again, I don't need a huge improvement there because the overall Ravens punt game was still like 11th in the National Football League once weather is adjusted for. So it doesn't need a huge improvement. He needs a slight improvement. What he needs a big improvement is in Tucker's numbers because that's actually probably the much larger context of team wins or losses swung.
It's very interesting because I would never, until I got into this discussion with you, have paired Stout's performance with Tucker's performance that way. And I certainly agree that it's an important part of the team, but I don't know how much Stout differentiates. I don't know how much any holder differentiates in that category.
I'll put this out there for a challenge. Anyone is interested in, anyone could be interested in. Obviously, Jim's done a lot of work on this, but I would love to hear from anyone else also. Technical bent, if you would like to try and explain the relative value of punting and kicking in today's NFL in terms of what's kind of like a standard deviation of result relative to expectation in terms of points, which is what I want in the end. I think it's the kind of thing Aaron Schatz could probably take us through.
He
probably thinks of it in these terms and probably could take it. But if there's a Baltimore analyst out there, I want to give it to a Baltimore fan first. If you want to do it, the show is yours. I'll let you explain your methodology, take you through it. I'll have some questions in the way I usually do, but I would love to hear that. Just as much as I really appreciated the way you've come up with this new definition for punting, you know, that put pins and booms. It's a great idea. You know, it's just the kind of thing. It's what model building is about. You got to make models. You got to be not afraid to fail at it.
Right.
So get a first model on the table. Improvements will be made. And I'm not saying you did fail, but just saying, you know, you got to be not afraid to. And then you learn things from that model. And then you learn things from the next model. And you learn things from the next model after that. So I'm really impressed that you come to the table with this. I've seen some of your work on wide receivers. I think you've done some similar things that are positive. So I really appreciate having you on
the show.
Thanks
for saying that.
How about a great season? What does a great season look like from Stout?
He's a punter. Who cares?
We just established that.
You know what a great season for Stout would be? The Ravens never need him to punt. They're scoring on every possession. That would be a great season.
Okay. I've got a great season, 80th percentile. Tucker returns to 10-plus points above expectation. Punting improves to the top quartile of the league in most of the important metrics. In-20 rate, touchback rate, starting opponent field position, again, relative to expectation. Punting DVOA improves to the top five. Does not require him to be in Pro Bowl consideration. I think that'll come in time if he does that. But Jordan Stout would essentially be turning his career into a potentially very long one with the Ravens if he had a year like that.
Yeah,
it would certainly set him up to be signed again after year four, potentially even after year three, if he were to have a year in the top five. And again, I think there's probably a 20% chance of that occurring. So that's why I've got it in the 80th percentile result here.
And you're talking like with the coaching of Randy Brown, and I think Sam Cook is on board as a coach as well. Like, you're talking about him developing as a technician in exactly the way the Ravens are set up to help develop a punter.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Well said. Jim, always a pleasure doing these shows with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Well, you can absolutely hit me on Twitter. I'm at @Zip_Jim on Twitter and Threads at Jim Zip Code. When the season starts, I'll be doing my weekly column on the Ravens wide receiver performance after every game. I try to get it out by Tuesday, and I usually definitely have it out by Thursday of each week.
All right. Outstanding. Jim is on almost every series we do. I'm sure he'll be on to talk offense or defense at least once during the season. And Jim, I really appreciate all the contributions you've made to these shows over the years. And
Ken, it is such a pleasure for me every time. I'm always grateful when you ask and make it a point to be available for it. Love doing it.
All right. Other folks out there, if you'd like to have a chance on film study, do a short. Maybe you want to talk about punting. Maybe you want to talk about something else. I have a series on concerns coming up. Now, Jim, it wouldn't be a series about concerns if your worry wartness wouldn't be involved in it. But seriously, come hit me up with the concern that you have for the Baltimore Ravens entering 2003. Try and make it as specific as possible, because there's going to be hopefully 6, 7, 8 people who do a concern show, even though there probably are not 6, 7, or 8 meaningful concerns about this football team right now. But I do want to hear from you. And DMs are always open on Twitter. I'll get back to you very quickly to schedule your show. Jim, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.